Moncrief on News Talk
with the Dacia Duster. Shockingly affordable, and now with 3 months deferred payments too.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You are indeed listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk, and it is indeed time once again for parenting. We're joined by Joanna Fortune, and listeners will be delighted to know that Joanna has now completed 45 minutes of parenting, by which I mean that the third of our 15-minute parenting books is to be published this Friday, I think. And this, teenagers in 15 minutes, Joanna?
Yeah, I've nailed it, Sean. This is it. This is the one. This is the retirement plan. No, it's, I just think, you know, and I think maybe at this time more than any other, it's trying to find ways to stay playful and connected with our teenagers calls for a whole load of creativity. So that's what I was aiming to do with this book. I work a lot with teenagers, and I often hear, you know, parents say, yeah, I get that play stuff with the little kids, but can you really do it with teenagers? So, I mean, my answer is yes, of course, but this is my way of showing you how I do it and how you can do it in your parenting.
Yeah, okay. Which I assume there's probably a lot of trial and error, particularly with the teenagers, because they're so particular.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And they're all, it's not a one size fits all, let's be honest. So you're going to find some of it you go, no, that'll never work with mine. And some of it you go, gosh, yeah, that really is. And, you know, there was a woman for a kind of experiment we were doing with this, who tried this with three very different teenagers. And she just said she was amazed that actually it was her hesitation was holding them back, because she wasn't sure she knew how to play with them, that she was going, oh, this is going to be weird, this is going to be awkward. But actually, they all had a really, really good time with it. And that's what it's about. I just think at the moment, opportunities for shared joy and a bit of crack are hard to find. So where we can, let's dig deep with them.
And was this, did you write this completely in lockdown?
Yes. Yes, I did start to finish, and it was a really tight deadline, you know, because the 8 to 12 book was out, you know, or, you know, just before the summer, around, you know, March, April time. So this one, it was coming hot on its heels. So, yeah, the whole thing with limited childcare, and, you know, it called for a lot of creativity on my part. So I can really, I think I empathized in this one with what I'm asking everyone else. It's the product of that creativity.
Yes. Joanna's next book is called How to Write a Book While Playing with Your 3-Year-Old at the Same Time.
That's good. Book 4, never say that out loud. No more books.
Right. Okay, right. Your first question here today. My 3-year-old has started saying F and hell when anything happens. He must have heard me and his dad saying it a few too many times. I feel awful. How do I stop him? I'm afraid she may say it in creche.
Oh, this one makes me smile, because I think anyone parenting a toddler has had some version of this, and you don't even know the kind of language you're using yourselves until you hear your toddler say it right back to you, and you go, I can only blame myself, this is where it had to come from. Look, there's a couple of reasons with this, and I mean, largely I would say do a whole lot of nothing and then a bit of positive reframing, because actually young children swear for a variety of reasons. Largely, no matter where it's coming from, they're exploring language. They're kind of discovering how things sound, how it feels in their mouth, different kind of reactions, different words and expressions elicit. And they do this through repetition. So yeah, they do take it from the adults around them quite a bit. But also think about it, when we swear ourselves as adults, it tends to be emotion loaded. We're very expressive. Our faces convey a lot. Our bodies are contorted. It tends to be quite an exciting thing from a child's point of view. Gosh, that's a big word with big meaning and big drama. I'm going to try that out too. So it can sound really exciting and interesting to them, but it also tends to get them quite a bit of attention. Initially, you might laugh, because for strange reasons, young children swearing can just make us stop and laugh at them. And they go, oh, that was good. Let's do it again and again. But, you know, sometimes, Sean, it just happens accidentally. Like, it could be a child who's trying to say one thing and it comes out as another. So they might be trying to say, I better be careful now myself. They're trying to say things like duck or truck, and it might come out as a different word of that. And so it's not actually that they intended it. It's that it was a mispronunciation. In that kind of situation, you just want to clarify how to say the word and move on. No big deal. In general, I think you've got to stay super calm. Don't do anything much about this at all. Because actually, if you react big, it just reinforces that this is a really special word. Choose new words is the other thing that I would recommend. So you're going to choose new expressions, new words, and you're going to declare those in animated tones, animated body and facial expressions, to encourage a fresh repetition. Give them something new and safe to repeat. So be dramatic with something that you're okay with them going into, you know, crash and repeating out loud. And if it doesn't work, the only attention you give this is, you know, gentle yet firm at their eye level, holding their hands. That's not a nice word. Say, oh dear, instead. So that's not a nice word, and use your face to express what you mean by that. Oh, I don't approve. And then give them something you do want them to say and wait until they say it. Try it now with me. Oh dear, and have them repeat it. And ultimately, yeah, state the obvious, watch your language around, because they are just little sponges going, I'm taking it all in and I will give it all back, probably at the least opportune moment when you have, you know, your in-laws around or something like that, and your three-year-old comes in swearing.
Yeah. Now, but once they've said, and like, of course, the first time they say it, usually to a parent, like, you know, nobody be able to keep a straight face because there's a surprise factor there. And then they might waddle off and get a few more positive reactions from some other adults. Then is there a program almost of deprogramming them from that?
Oh, that's exactly it, because it's an involuntary thing. Sometimes we laugh out of a nervous thing, go, oh my goodness, did they really just say that? And of course, you're absolutely right. They're going to see, we might then get to grips going, okay, I really shouldn't laugh. I'm going to do this. I'm going to say it's not a nice word. Do the other thing. I'm going to do all that. But they're also going to try out, do other grown-ups act like you did the first time? So they might try out saying it with a few other grown-ups. So if it's something that you do hear back that it's gone into creche, just say, stay also calm with the creche. This will not be the first time they've had a child do this.
Oh,
like,
no.
Absolutely. So they will be on top of it, and just let them know that you are too. Yeah, he's really trying this out with a few people. Here's what we're saying at home. It'd be great if we could all say the same thing. So then they're getting a different but same reaction. So instead of everyone laughing, they're now saying, oh, everybody says it's not nice. That must be true then.
Yeah, okay. It's sooner or later, I suppose, they get it. I like, I've told the story several times before that my son, when he was about three, used to line up dinky cars in the back of the couch. And if one fell down, he'd go, F's sake. But he kept doing it. So we started saying, whenever he said it, we'd say, you know, get down to his eye level and say, don't say that word. And then after a while, he'd just go, F's sake, don't say that word. So we gave him a new swear word, actually, rather than getting rid of that one. My 14-year-old daughter is quite mature for her age, always has been beyond her years. Recently, she told her and me that she was gender neutral. She says she feels she's neither male nor female. She said she's told her friends and they are very supportive. She also dropped a bombshell and said she is planning on having her breasts removed when she turns 18. I know we have a long way to go until then, and she is young, but she is normally very considered in her thought process. So I know she has put time into this decision. I love her. I support her choices, and I always have. But this has thrown me, especially the surgery. I honestly don't even know where to begin to help her, talk to her or anything.
Yeah, this is a lot for parents. And I think, you know, when I was looking at this, I was reminded there was a study done in the UK, and I think it was back in 2015, actually. It was a YouGov study, so a pretty big study. And it found that they were interviewing young people aged 18 to 24 years, so a bit older than we're talking about here, and that as high as 49% of them did not see themselves as 100% heterosexual. And I just think, like, what was once, and not that long ago, a question of identifying as gay or straight is now much more nuanced, much more complex, but also much more rich and inclusive. And that's, you know, there's so much benefit in that, especially for young people. But I think it's also easy to get it wrong as a parent. And my straight up advice to this parent is, hold a position of not knowing. Stay out of certainty here, because you're not certain. You openly admit this is not something that you feel very strong in or that you know where to begin with. So hold that position of not knowing, but seeking to better understand, because that's really helpful, because you can go to your teenager and say, look, that's been a lot for me to take in. And what I've realized is that I don't know how to say or do the right thing now. And I'm wondering if we can support each other through this, and you can guide and help me. And then that, you know, you're going to get it wrong sometimes, you definitely will, and that you invite them to talk, correct you if you're using inaccurate pronouns, if they would prefer to be referred to using different pronouns than you're currently using, then respect that. But also, you know, acknowledge from the outset, look, I think I'm going to forget and get this wrong sometimes. Mm. And it's not that I don't care or don't respect you. It's that I'm learning. So please be tolerant with me through that. You know, adolescents, you know, in general, not this young person, but adolescence, it's a time of identity exploration and, you know, an opportunity to discover a deeper sense of self. So teenagers entering into a state of questioning regarding any part of their development, including sexual identity or gender identity, is actually very healthy and not something that we should rush to pathologize or correct or anything interfere with, but just acknowledge and support them as they negotiate their way through this as well. So I think if you're teenager, if your 14-year-old is coping well, and I really take on board that you've said, you know, you have a teenager here who has always been mature beyond their years, has always really considered everything that they're doing, and that you don't see that this would be any different. Clearly, they've given this a lot of thought and consideration. But if they do come to you and say, look, actually, I'm struggling, actually, I do need a little bit of help, help is available. You could contact CAMHS, Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services. The waiting lists are very long at the moment. Mm. So if you were in a position to seek, you know, individual private psychotherapy, that would certainly be something worth doing. But outside of your teenager, maybe that's something you should consider for yourself as well, as you're negotiating and adjusting through this new information as well. So you could go and have some therapy, but also reach out to organizations like belongto.org, who could maybe point you in a direction with information, support groups, and just give you a space where you can think and talk some of this out loud and what it's like for you.
Yeah. On that point, though, of maybe getting some therapy, Are you potentially sending a message to the 14-year-old that, well, there's something wrong with you? She mightn't think there's something wrong with her.
No, and there isn't. And, you know, gender identity that's a really good question, because it's not a mental health consideration. But what it can do when you're, you know, dealing with other people in your life and watching how they might be struggling with your decisions and choices, it can bring up some anxiety. And it's the anxiety that you would be getting the support with, not the gender identity piece. It's the anxiety or anything else that might come up around that. It's also entirely possible. And I remember working with a young person who was identifying actually as non-binary as well, but actually, you know, Kate was coming to me for something to do with mental health and nothing to do with their gender identity, and the high level of frustration that everything was made to be about gender identity, when actually, yes, I identify as non-binary, but by the way, I have anxiety quite separate and apart from this. So I think if there is anything else going on, you welcome and greet that like you typically would. But if this process and others around you adjusting, and maybe others getting it a little more wrong than I can cope with at 14, having a neutral space would be somewhere to emotionally exhale some of that frustration and anxiety.
Right. We do have to take a commercial break. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. After that, a 4-year-old who likes to smell their hand. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. John of Fortune is still with us. Lots of people texting in, giving various instances of when their toddler swore. Seemed like pretty much all the toddlers in Ireland are swearing up a storm. On the 14-year-old who isn't identifying with any particular gender at the moment. One texter says, put that non-binary girl in touch with the gender dysphoria clinic in Colliquhill Hospital in Loughlinstown. My child is transgender. So that's one other possible suggestion, I guess. My 4-year-old son keeps smelling his hands. It's very strange. He will be walking along and then stop, put his hands to his face and then take a big sniff. He does it watching television too. It's not that his hands smell of food or anything. This happens when they're clean. Maybe it's just the soap we have, but why would he be doing it? I haven't told him to stop in case he does it more in defiance, which would be like him. Any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, lots of thoughts and lots of wonderings. I'm wondering mostly, is it a recent phenomenon? And by recent at this stage, it could be any time in the last 6 or 7 months since we all became so hand hygiene focused. And I think, you know, because we were focused so much on especially children this age, and it may well be a part of, I'm imagining, preschool at this age, you know, that they do regular hand washing. But, you know, with that increase on washing your hands, sanitizing, and sanitizer has quite a strong smell, generally speaking, that there may be this kind of compulsion to check the hands and go, do I still smell clean? Can I smell the sanitizer? And just becoming a little hand hygiene fixated in this way. And I imagine not being that conscious of it, actually, though I do note that you're saying if I bring it to his attention, he's going to keep doing it in defiance. You know, I think that, you know, we sometimes give our four-year-olds too much credit in that regard. Sometimes it's just more an impulse. I just do it without thinking. So I think if it was me, I would be saying, you know, name it to it. Oh, I see you're smelling your hands. I wonder, can you wiggle your hands? Can you clap your hands? Can you wave your hands? Can you scrunch them into fists? Can you stretch them out wide? Wow, your hands are great. They can do so many things. In other words, distract and redirect, so that you're just bringing attention to what other things the hands can do. And otherwise, I would make the hand washing a more nurture-based ritual with him. So, you know, like a basin or a little bowl of warm, soapy water, and play in the water a little bit. You know, scooping the bubbles from your hand to their hand and back again, you know, doing a little hand stack in the basin, then a warm fluffy towel to dry the hands, and putting then the bit of lotion or sanitizer, whatever you're doing afterwards, so that you're actually getting quite a lot of that deep pressure touch then with the lotion or the sanitizer, rubbing it in, so that proprioceptive, that deep pressure touch into the hands that sends a message from the skin to the brain, you're safe, you can co-regulate here with me, I'm going to keep you safe, and just bring them down and calm them down that way. So you can increase the nurture aspect, because, you know, it is at the moment just wash your hands because there could be germs on it, which is more scary than nurturing. So bringing a bit of nurture in could increase the sensory, positive sensory experience of it.
Mm. But it could be just a habit he has, right? And nothing more complicated than that.
Absolutely. It could be just like I was saying, just an impulse that he's checking his hands, smelling his hands. And I think if you are using soap that smells quite fruity and nice, I mean, kids do, or even lotion, like kids do like to smell that. You do it yourself. You put on lotion, you go, oh, that smells nice, and you move on. But they might keep smelling it and see how long does the smell last before it goes. But I think there's lots of things that you can just do to take care of his hands that aren't about washing and sanitizing. You could even do things like, you know, open out his hand and trace with your index finger the lines on his hand, and do a bit of fortune telling, if you like, but this time you're going to pick out three nice things. This is your play line, because you're so good at playing. This is your friend line. This is your listening to line. Whatever line you need can be in there, and you could do that, and then move into a bit of round and round the garden. So you could do lots of play with hands as well, and again, that's in the distraction redirection, if it's something that you're thinking, I'd like to break this habit or impulse, but at the same time, just keep an eye on it. There may be nothing more to it than it's a nice kind of sensory smell for him.
Right. I have a fabulous five, nearly 6-year-old, full of energy, enthusiasm and devilment, yet still afraid of being on her own anywhere. Her bedroom, the toilet, going up the stairs, in our house, etc. And will not stay in her own bed at night, because when she wakes up, she's terrified. She falls asleep on her own as long as I or Dad are outside the door. Her big sister is in the room next door and the doors are open, etc. School is wonderful. She loves it. Has loads of friends, does activities, gymnastics, dancing, with no issues at all. Any ideas on what is going on in her little head, and what can I do to help her get over her fear of being alone?
I mean, anything could be going on in her little head. And I suppose, again, I don't know how long this is going on, but is this something that has started since you were all spending much more time together, and now there's an adjustment back to more outside world? Tentatively, I say that'll change again at midnight tonight. But kids are still going out to school when they were at home with their parents quite intensely for an extended period of time. So I wonder, is there a little bit of permanence around this of, when I'm at home, I just want to keep an eye on you and for you to keep an eye on me? That would be a simmering level of anxiety that isn't interfering with school or activities or friendships, which is great, but it is interfering beyond bedtime, because you're saying this is, as you know, going upstairs and doing things like that. Also, the word terrified is jumping out at me, that this isn't just a fear, this is bigger than fear, because terror is something else. So I think you need to get curious about, what is the scare? Like, what is it you're afraid of? What might happen? What do you think or worry might happen? Don't judge anything that they come up with. And, you know, even on that, I'd get playful with it. Break out those little small world toys and play out the part that you know. So you play out bedtime and going to sleep and staying outside the door and play out the point of waking up then. And then you stop and you hand your little one, hand them the dolls and say, now you finish the story. Tell me what happens next. And let them play out what's happening when at the point of waking up and beyond that. Don't judge, don't dismiss, don't minimize. Like if it's about monsters or scare or whatever she comes up with, accept it and empathize. Oh, that's what you think is happening. I'm so sad for you. That must be very scary. I understand. And I think, you know, just giving a little bit of leeway to this is going to be how you have to go at it, because this is a tough time for kids. It really is. If this was to continue or escalate, in terms of this question, what might be going on in her head, if this, you know, doing the bit of story play, if getting curious and playful, if you're not getting to the bottom of it, if you're not getting any deeper understanding and this continues, I'd say, you know, certainly towards the end of the year, and or if it escalated before that, I think you would have to consider bringing her to see somebody who could maybe help her think that out loud using specialized play techniques.
Hopefully it won't come to that.
Joanna, hopefully not.
Yeah, Joanna, thanks a million for talking with us today. 15 Minute Parenting the Teenage Years, Creative Ways to Stay Connected with Your Teenager is available from Friday. I was going to say it's in the shops on Friday, but you know what I mean. Get on your screen to buy it. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. We want to take a break. After that, the secret world of MI9.
Moncrief on News Talk
with the Dacia range. Drive away today with no payments for the first 3 months.